This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Are you there, Sam?
Yep, hang on, I'm just turning that on.
Is our guest ready?
Yep, I've got the music ready.
Can you hear me okay?
Yep, sounds great.
Cool. Otago Access Radio, in partnership with Otago Polytechnic, brings you Blowing Bubbles.
Blowing Bubbles brings you positive conversations with people in their bubbles around the world.
We're curious about how people are finding new ways of life, being and problem solving. Every Wednesday, the Sustainable Lens team of Samuel Mann and Mawira Karatai reach out from our bubbles to chat with interesting and positive people around the world.
Broadcast on Otago Access Radio, 105.4 FM in Dunedin, and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz.
Bringing joy, connection, kindness and peace in all the days ahead.
Welcome to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. I'm Samuel Mann in Otapoji, Dunedin, and I'm joined from Stillano to Tahu Christchurch, by Mawira Karatai. Kia ora, Mawira.
Kia ora, Sam. How's it going?
It's going very well indeed. We're recording this in October and you're still at the Adaption Futures Conference. How's it going?
It's actually been really amazing. Yesterday I got to socialise a new systems thinking methodology that I've been working on, and it went so well.
Awesome.
And one of my students got to deliver her first paper to a big conference. Of course, she starts with a UN conference. So we're all good.
We're all good. And who are we introducing today?
It is my great pleasure to you're not supposed to have favourites, right? I've got a whole class of favourites. So Corey Moyer is in my class of favourites. This is my second or third paper that I've taught you guys. Second, one of them anyway, and hopefully I'll find them again somewhere later in their lives. Hopefully they'll all sign up for PhDs. Welcome, Corey. It's wonderful to have you.
Sign up for PhDs? You just gave me a spike of fear. When would I find the time? It's great to be here. Great to see everybody. Thanks so much for inviting me on your podcast.
Welcome, Corey. Where did you grow up, Corey?
I grew up in Gore, so down in the southern part of New Zealand. And whenever I say the word Gore, my R rises to the surface once again. So I kind of was, it's a very colonial type of upbringing, but I was brought up on a sheep farm down in Gore, and kind of it's a classic like Gore thing to do. So from a Catholic family, lots of kids, lots of sheep, lots of cows. And then Dad did a very controversial thing in Gore. He sold the farm and moved into town. So I became a townie for the last couple of years of my secondary schooling, and then went up to Otago University. Yeah.
Well, what did you want to be when you grew up?
Oh, I wanted to be a scientist, so I kind of followed my passion at school in bursary back in seventh form, which takes an explanation to explain because I haven't figured out the year 13, year 12 thing yet. But yeah, in seventh form, I did great at maths and science. So I went to university and did maths and science. So I was passionate about being a scientist, having the lab jacket, you know, having the pocket protector, being the whole character. And I did it. I did a degree in biochemistry. I became a research scientist for 2 years, but then I fell into theater. So I was doing lots of dancing and singing and musical theater in my spare time, and my passion changed. I fell into that. I love that more, I have to say. I still love science, but the chance to get on stage and be a bit of an idiot was more of a passion. So I switched out of being a scientist and I went up to Christchurch to do a diploma in circus arts. So I went from science to circus. My mum was super proud of me.
That's a great course. I really like that course.
The circus arts course, yeah. Or the biochemistry course?
No, well, we'll put up with the biochem, but the circus one, I've heard good things about that.
It was brilliant. Yeah, this was before the earthquake too, so they had this old at CPIT, which it was at the time, they had this old tuck shop, which was the old school cafeteria, right? So they had this beautiful old building right at the corner of campus. And after, of course, people moved out of it, there wasn't the tuck shop anymore. Well, what are we going to do with it? And they just turned it into this huge circus space. So it had a flying trapeze, had silks, it had a big tumbling floor, you name it, it had it. It was incredible space. Unfortunately, in the earthquake, it got, it all just fell to pieces. Now it's just another 3-4 giant glass metal building, generic looking broadcast center now, I think it is.
So what's the pathway from circus to leadership? Ringmaster.
Yes. Hey, talking about frameworks, that's great, Moir. Maybe I should develop a circus leadership framework. Not quite as cool as the forest one, but I think it might work nicely. That was it. I went from circus, and then myself and my circus partner, we went over to Edinburgh in Scotland for the Edinburgh Festival and tried to make it big. So we had a double act, which is very vaudevillian sounding. And we just kind of snuck into a couple of different circuses and performances and tried to get picked up. But this was in 2006. And it was kind of the economic crisis was just coming into fruition, right? So there was no extra money for entertainment. So it was a real struggle. We didn't get picked up by anybody. So we ended up, kind of breaking up our partnership. And I moved down to London and just started doing anything I could to make some money. And then from there, I fell into a random audition for a cruise ship. And then I ended up, for a long, long, long story, ended up getting a job as a dancer on a cruise. And then from there, just started to sail around the world. After 14 years of singing and dancing, I moved up to a cruise director position. So that's kind of the long tail to get to a leadership role from circus to cruise director. Yeah.
And what are you doing now?
So now I work in an office at a government position. So I work at Pharmac in New Zealand, which is the pharmaceutical management agency. So I fell into that because COVID. So working on a cruise ship sailing around the world, it's not exactly conducive with the COVID virus. So I finished up on ships in about March. I think it was actually Valentine's Day in 2020. We got all the passengers, we're sailing around the Caribbean. So we pulled up alongside, we had all the passengers get off. And then the rest of the crew stayed on the ship for the next almost 2 months because, they couldn't figure out how to get, a crew of 1,000 home because flights were out. And it wasn't just my ship, it was another, a fleet of 30, 40 different ships. So they ended up, after 6 weeks of sailing around the Caribbean, waiting to see what was going to happen, they brought everyone together, this big kind of donut of ships. They dropped all the lifeboats off, and then they kind of shuffled everybody around. So each ship then became a different country. So it was like, okay, this ship's going to New Zealand. So all the New Zealanders and Australians all went to that ship. And then everyone to the Philippines went to a different ship. And they honestly, the logistical way of doing it was to sail everybody home, which is insane. But to get everybody off in America to fly everyone home, it just couldn't happen. So we ended up sailing everybody home. I got sneaky. I managed to get off the ship in the Netherlands, and I caught a flight home, one of the last flights back to New Zealand from there. Some other crew members weren't quite so lucky and did a 2.5-month cruise to get back to Australia because they had to go around, because in the Caribbean, so we went across and around South Africa, up around through the Philippines, and then down to New Zealand. Ooh, so it was tough for some, but I was quite lucky.
We had better play the first of your music choices.
Oh yeah.
What have we got? Reel by Fish, Sell Out. Why this one?
It's because this is actually links it nicely to my cruise director career, because it has a great little intro to it. The song is bonkers, but it has a great bum 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 bum, which is every cruise director needs like a sting or an intro piece of music to come onto the stage with. And when you listen to the song, you'd be like, oh, that's, you can imagine the bit I cut out to make that my intro music. It's wild. The whole thing is about eating burgers and the song is a bit nonsense, but that little sting at the start and the end of the song, it was the best.
Yeah.
Everybody who has lived a good life, and it seems like you've lived a really good life, has got really good role models. Who were your role models and what did they model for you?
Oh, who are my role models and what did they model for me? Ah, I think probably from cruise ships, honestly. I had the great thing about cruise ships is when you're on board, you have like a 4-month or a 6-month contract. So you make instant friends with everyone because you have to. But then after 6 months, you all get off the ship, you all go home for 2 months, and then you come back on board and then meet a whole brand new bunch of people. So the great thing is I had this like almost conveyor belt of different people coming through and stepping into leadership roles. So when I was like a deputy cruise director, I had amazing cruise directors that came on board. And yeah, there was this one guy that came on who was just incredible. Absolutely incredible. His name was Peter, and just lived his authentic self. Like, he still put on a great show and was a great entertainer, but was just honestly and truly him. So sometimes when you get these cruise director roles, you have someone playing a character, and then when they're off stage, they're just a whole different person. I think this person was authentically the same no matter what, and that really resonated with me. It made me realize you don't have to be a character when you're stepping into a leadership role. I'm playing a boss now, or I'm playing the cruise director now. It was great. So that honestly really stuck with me. Peter was a legend for that. He was the same on and off stage. And that was, I don't know, one of those significant learnings going, right. So simple, right, when you look at it, but it was one of those ones that really stuck with me.
Yeah. And that, and I see that because I see that all the time, and I see that in my teaching profession, with over the years with various teachers that I've met, the ones who are authentically all the same, when they meet their students outside of the space, the student has the same experience with them, and that's how it should be, because that's modeling good leadership, as you say, predictable, authentic, real.
Yeah. Because people can see through fake. People can see through it so quickly. And as soon as something doesn't gel in their mind, they may not be able to put a name to it, but they're just, their ick factor will just slam in place and be like, I don't trust you anymore.
And so, the impact of that is far reaching.
It is. It really is. Yeah. And you can see it with, we won't talk about politics, but you can see it in so many cases of like, yeah, there's a disconnect there.
Yeah,
but yeah. Totally. Blew me away. This guy could be his genuine self but still host an entire 4,000 passenger cruise ship. It's great.
Do you keep in touch with him?
I don't know. It's terrible. Oh. That's the worst thing about cruise ships, because you kind of get off after your 4-month contract. And then, I mean, thank goodness for Facebook, because that's the only way we can kind of keep in touch. But yeah. I don't, unfortunately, we've sort of just moved on to different things. But I do occasional Facebook stalking just to see what he's up to.
Well, see if you can find him and send him a copy of this so he knows his impact.
Hey. That's true. I will. That's great.
Now, you, speaking of good leadership, you made a podcast and it's really good. And so who did you interview and why did you choose them?
I was really happy. I managed to interview Kate Porter from Air New Zealand. She works for the communications team. I was super chuffed, actually, because we had about a month before I interviewed her for the podcast, we had a government agency get together, basically looking into sustainability, especially when it came to travel. So we did, we had lots of people coming in from different fields to chat about what they're doing with sustainability, so car rental places and air travel too. So it was great to talk to Kate, because she did a great presentation talking about sustainable aviation fuel. And we know about sustainable aviation fuel. It's something that's basically a drop-in fuel, which is brilliant, but it's made from, you know, lots of different organic things or slash or garbage or old cooking oil. So they're using different ways of making it. Brilliant. But the thing I found really interesting was some of the back-end stuff about how you can claim your carbon through scope 1 and scope 3 and how that all splits up. And it was hauntingly confusing, to be honest. So if I was trying to pass on to a leadership team about investing in SAF to reduce their carbon emissions through scope 3+, I was like, oh, how are you as a communicator expert at Air New Zealand, how are you demystifying that? So it was so great to get her on for a chat and talk about that. Ironically, we talked about totally other stuff. We talked about SAF for about 7 minutes, and then we went chatting about her experience working with Countdown or Woolworths, and some of the other part of sustainability, which is the social part. We always focus on environment, or I certainly do, but we went on a wonderful tangent talking about how people volunteer goods or donate goods, and how there's an interesting shift, like the more affluent parts of society actually don't donate as much food as like people who live in less affluent places. And
exactly.
I found that amazingly interesting, right? I went, oh, so Win for Fuel came out with food. It was a beautiful tangent, but it was so great to talk to Kate. Welcome to my podcast. My name is Corey Moyer, and I am from Wellington, New Zealand. Now, it's my great pleasure to be studying a Master's of Sustainable Business at Otago University. Now, during my day-to-day, I work at a government agency called Pharmac, and part of my role is to do carbon reporting, so how much carbon that we emit during the year. Now, part of that role saw me invited to a all-of-government sustainability workshop forum at the end of July 2025. And at this forum, I got to meet this wonderful person called Kate Porter, the sustainability manager focusing on communications and engagement at Air New Zealand, who I nicknamed the guru of sustainability. And she gave a wonderful presentation that really ignited my passion to learn more about sustainable aviation fuel, known as SAF. So I found a great 2024 paper from Wong et al. Called Decarbonizing and Offsetting Emissions in the Airline Industry, Current Perspectives and Strategies. And it was sort of a great summary of where we're at when it comes to SAF, sustainable aviation fuel. I mean, the prediction is showing that this year, 2025, the airline industry will emit 1,100 million metric tons of carbon emissions, which is just huge. The problem is SAF, which is an alternative and has a lot less carbon emissions because it's made from biomass, from slash, from cooking oil, from all sorts of things that could just be thrown out. They make use that to make fuel. The problem is it's 4 to 10 times more expensive than kerosene. But even with that barrier in place, there's still a real passion. And in fact, Singapore announced in February 2025 that in the next year, 2026, all flights out of or transitioning through Singapore will be mandated to have 1% of their fuel from sustainable aviation fuel, from SAF. So it really got me thinking, and the fact that it's such an interesting and a juicy topic and kind of hard to understand what's happening in the world of SAF. So I managed to reach out to Kate and she agreed to come on. We had a wonderful chat getting straight into sustainable aviation fuel. But I really wanted to take some time to take a step back and learn more about how Kate herself got into sustainability and what makes her tick. We have some great questions here that kind of might tease a bit out of you, I suppose. So my first one is, and it feels like a bit of a tangent, quite an abrupt whiplash, but where do you feel most at home?
Where do I feel most at home?
See, total whiplash, yeah.
I feel most at home. I have a partner, long-suffering, he's sitting over there. I have twin daughters who are 10. I have a dog and a three-year-old dog who's the love of my life, and 2 16-year-old cats who used to be the love of my life, but now I'm really into my dog. This is my happy place, you know. We've got a cool school community. I've been in Auckland my whole life. I really enjoy it as much as everybody loads it. I love it. It's cool. It's diverse. It's beautiful. The weather's great.
Compared to Wellington. Yeah, Auckland weather, they should promote that more. I mean,
well, it's also
weather's great.
I've actually just been in Palm Springs where it was 45 degrees. And I came back to Auckland and, you know, it was like, I don't know, it's 18 or something and it was, you know, it's winter. And it's just so fresh and lovely and you just sort of forget. And because we're in Isthmus, you know, there's no pollution or anything. You just always have a breeze. And I don't know, it made me really appreciative of what we have here, I guess. Yeah, we're pretty amazingly lucky.
Oh, we take it for granted, don't we? We kind of like,
very much.
Yeah. Yeah, this country with barely 5 million people, all this extra space, beautiful greenery.
So much water.
Yes, everyone's like, what, 2 hours from the beach, no matter where you are, type of vibe. You don't get that when you're in the middle of America, for example. Right. Palm Springs.
Oof. Yeah, middle of the desert.
And was there a moment that sparked your passion for sustainability, or have you kind of fallen into it?
I come from probably more of a, I guess, people and community type background. So I think I've more, you know, my drivers have always been more, I guess, social than environmental. I've been really fortunate enough to work for a number of organisations where I've sort of looked after community relationships and community kind of do-gooding, for want of a better word.
Sure.
And I really love that. And I really love it. When I was in my previous role, which was at Woolworths, I worked on food rescue. And so, you know, again, I came to that from a very social perspective, i.e., you know, there are people who are hungry, this food is being wasted, how do we help get it to them? But I guess over the time, you also learn about, you know, I was really heavily involved in food rescue for a long time, and you really learn and talk a lot more about the environmental impact of food waste, and then I guess food production and, you know, all of that kind of thing. So I guess my sort of sideline into the environmental side of things really came from food rescue, because for me, it's one of the most critical things we could do, where we're winning on both hands, you know. And I think when you look at sustainability, I think it has to do more than just one job. So if we just look after the environment, for example, that could then potentially sometimes come at the cost of people or people's jobs or livelihoods. If we just look after people, then we aren't always thinking about the environmental impact. And I think it really has to go hand in hand. And we're learning a lot about that. I was at a session this week about, you know, climate adaptation, and about how, you know, New Zealanders are going to have to start to really think about, you know, where they live and the risks that they take on as a result of that. But, you know, the risk that you're able to take on very much depends on who you are, what you earn, your stage of life, you know. And there's, I don't know, I just think that there's so many issues that are entwined. And that's kind of the part that I find really interesting. I love nature and I love the being outdoors and all of that kind of thing. And I love the sea. But for me, it's really about that connection between people and environment that I find the most interesting, I guess.
Yeah, that's a really good point, because sustainability, people usually just think of, you know, pick up your trash or focus on the environment. But like the pillars of sustainability and environment and social and governance as well, these are all things that have to work together. I mean, it's like three legs on a stool. That's one of the classic analogies I use. So you can't just like remove one or focus on one, the whole thing falls over.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, particularly as we go into, you know, this next 25 years, you know, some of these decisions are going to get really, really hard. You know, even if you think about it from an Air New Zealand perspective, at a base level, you know, yes, we, you know, if we wanted to just reduce carbon tomorrow and buy, you know, SAF to help us do that, we would go out of business. And we also would, or it would make prices so expensive New Zealanders couldn't fly. So, you know, those are things we have to weigh up constantly.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Have you, and it's interesting because you mentioned this just from your work with Woolworths, have your views of sustainability changed over time? I guess as you've got more into learning about SAF with Air New Zealand, with the social aspect from Woolworths?
Yes, I think they have. One of the things I feel quite strongly about now that I don't think I used to is that I really believe that people who are in power should use that power. And I don't mean by people who are actually in power. I mean, you know, me as a middle-class Pākehā woman that's educated and has various resources available to me, including a voice, I should use that. And I feel, and I think also that there are, you know, climate and sustainability and community and it isn't created equal, you know. And so I think it's about, I really do feel now that if you are able, you should be doing something or you should be helping. And it isn't good enough to just wait. Saying that makes me sound very sort of activist-y. I'm not at all. It's more that I feel that businesses who can take a lead should take a lead. I think there should be, you know, people who can stand up for communities who can't should do so. I just think, yeah, if you can afford, for example, to pay for sustainable aviation fuel or to do your carbon credits, you should be doing it. There are many people who can't, and I don't have any issue with that. I would much rather that mother put food on the table for her children rather than paid a carbon credit by miles. But for people who are able to, I believe you should. And I think that's probably changed a bit, because I think when I first came to this game, I was very much like, you know, any little bit helps. But one of the really interesting things that I found from my time at Woolworths, because we did a lot of, you know, community kind of campaigns and a lot of, you know, fundraising drives and all of these things. And it is the people from the lowest socioeconomic communities that give the most. And I really, and I've learnt that over many years, you know, our supermarkets in very high economic areas and very wealthy suburbs were far and away, unfortunately, the least generous than some of our stores and customers in our lowest socioeconomic areas. And I just think that, you know, if you take that into account, even in the work I'm doing now, you know, again, coming back to sort of high value customers, yes, they do spend a lot with us, but they need a different approach from somebody who is on the bones of their bottom and struggling to pay for a flight. That the two approaches are not the same.
That's so great. That's really, really.
You ask anybody in the supermarket game about that, and they will say the same thing. It's really, really interesting. I think it's a global thing.
That's fascinating. I want to do a whole podcast just on that, but otherwise we'll go for like three hours. I guess there's so much there. There's so much to pick. It is very hard, as we sort of said at the start. It's a tough thing to pull apart, but I guess it's just to start, just to do something. So with that in mind, if you could wave a magic wand and change one thing about the world, what would it be?
Oh God, I actually
imagine
don't
you have
know.
A genie, you have one wish, and well, the wish to be something to do with the topic would be good, sustainable mindset. But what's the one thing you would do? I finished my stumpy, tricky question.
It's probably just because this is on my mind at the moment, but I wish we could be more ambitious for the future. I think, and that I think is more particular to New Zealand. I personally am really worried about the country that my children will inherit. And I personally, not speaking on behalf of Air New Zealand, I am not seeing a future that is, you know, that is really worth our kids staying here for. And I think for me, I'm like, if I could change anything right at the moment, I would be to, you know, to get people to start to think about, like, we have, like, to my earlier point, we've got such an incredible country here. We are going to be so sought after, you know, when the world is too hot, when people aren't going to Europe because it's too hot, when it's too hot to go to Sydney, when there's no water in, you know, Perth. people are going to want to come here. Our renewable energy, our beautiful plants, our amazing, you know, clean seas, you know, relatively speaking, and friendly people and lots of space. And I just think, you know, imagine if we were really aiming towards that as a country on a number of fronts, whether that's, you know, at a social level, making sure that we, you know, have an equal and kind country, to economic growth, you know, to really having a strong vision, having, you know, manufacturing and agricultural and horticultural sectors that are incredible. Like, all of that matters. And that's, I think, what I would be looking at. And it isn't just one over the expense of the other, you know, but that's probably what I would change at the moment. But I have been at a climate conference for the last few days, and it was quite depressing.
And you're like, there's got to be, yeah, I need to,
there's
you need
be
to
a better way.
Buy the glasses half full. I love that. I love that point. I think New Zealand has such a passion for innovation and invention and that whole number eight wire type of thing. And to have that mindset kind of percolate throughout the country to like look at what we can do with that point in mind, with the idea that New Zealand's going to be a bastion against the climate change around the rest of the world if we really set it up that way. So there's such an opportunity there.
I heard a stat this morning, actually, that I think it might be 30% or around 30% of New Zealanders are now not born in New Zealand. So that brings enormous opportunity for how we shape, you know, our nation for the future. But all of us, anybody who is living here has, you know, particularly people with children. And I think, you know, I really do think that people with kids are thinking about this really differently. I want my children to want to stay here. I do not want them to move to Australia because they think it's a better place. I don't want them to be deciding to stay in Europe for the rest of their life. I mean, yes, some will, that's fine. Mm. But I would really want New Zealand to be the place that they want to choose. And it's, you know, and that doesn't, it's not homogenous. It's going to look like lots of different people and lots of different things. But I think it, for me, it's a sort of a level of ambition that climate and sustainability is a really, really critical part of. But that's, I think, yeah, that's for me what I think I'd want to change. Oh, and world peace.
Outstanding.
Child poverty, picking. Domestic violence, and world peace.
And world peace. As like a sweetener, that'd be great. Yeah. Kate, thank you so much for joining me on my podcast today.
You're very welcome. It was fun.
Absolute pleasure chatting to you. Yes, I'm inspired. I'm like, run for government. This is great. I'm like, I'm buying what you're saying. No, it's fabulous. And even though you may not say you're a guru, I think after just chatting to you for the last half an hour, I certainly think you are maybe a mini guru when it comes to sustainability.
Thank you very much.
It's been an absolute pleasure.
Corey, what was your big takeaway from that awesome interview?
I wanted more. That was my takeaway. I honestly could have gone for 90 minutes just chatting to Kate. That was so interesting. It blew my mind that the people that have the means to do more should do more, right? And it's incredible that the narrative has switched. The people that are struggling themselves are the ones that are putting in the extra, you know, can of tomatoes or putting in the another box of Weet-Bix, where people who are better off, not so much. So it's, I found that such an interesting insight. And it's like, how do you pull that kind of substance from the people that donate more and inject that into the people that should donate more? So really, really fascinating, and kind of done a whole series just chatting about that, honestly.
It's hard, isn't it? Because if you've never felt the struggle, then you'd never develop that empathy for people for whom the struggle is real. And even like you talked about growing up on a sheep farm in the South Island and a really great life, then you went to the UK and were like, oh, the struggle is real.
Right.
So you get the struggle.
Yeah, that's it. And it's kind of, I want to, and it's a great insight because I want to judge the people that don't donate more. But you're right, if they haven't got that foundational upbringing to know, then there's no guilt there. It's just different perspectives, right? So it's,
I just how don't do we think about it.
Yeah, exactly. So how do we, I don't know, link those two missing ideas together somehow? Really interesting.
Is it something about, linking that back to sustainability, is it something about an extraction mindset that some people are in it to extract all the value for themselves that they can, and anything else just doesn't occur to them?
I mean, potentially, right? And that sounds kind of like, it sounds very much like the Bond villain, doesn't it? It sounds like the person who's sitting there with their fingers like Burns from The Simpsons going, excellent, more. But as we said, maybe it's just a case of like, hey, that's how that's their upbringing. That's their foundation. It's like their folks, their parents, their people, their role models. That's it. You get out there and you work and you take as much as you can because that's where you come from. That's your foundation. So yeah, that's it. But are they the Bond villains? I don't know. It's more like that's where they've come from and who they are.
Because you talked a little bit before about the different sorts of sustainability, and one of the things that I think is that if you don't understand that it's actually all the same, then we've kind of missed the point.
Yeah, that's a point. Yeah, and maybe because we're trying to get too granular by putting it in certain baskets, we do miss the point of it all. You know, doing good stuff to help people out on a planet that's finite. Let's work together to do all that gooey, chocolatey, centery stuff, right? Let's work on that. So yeah, it's tough. I think that's something to work on, isn't it? It's something for us to really focus on, that kind of fun, gooey, chocolatey center of it all. Like that squishy stuff that makes the world a better place and working and living with people a better place, right? And you're right, maybe we focus too much on carbon credits, or we focus too much on sustainable aviation fuel, and all these tags then suddenly flare up on people's minds and give them a bit of ick, a bit of distance from it. But if we just simplify it, let's just have a nice planet to live on with some nice people to live with.
Best definition I've heard for a long time. Let's take the second of your music choices. Let's have, Postmodern Jukebox, All About That Bass.
Because you know I'm all about that bass and no trouble. I'm all about that bass and no trouble. I'm all about that bass and no trouble. I'm all about that bass.
Yeah, it's pretty clear, I ain't no size dude, but I can shake it like I'm supposed to do. Cause I got that boom boom that all the boys are chasing, all the right junk in all the right places. I see those magazines working on Photoshop, you know that stuff ain't real. Come on and make it stop. If you got beauty, then raise them up, cause every inch of you is perfect from the bottom to the top. My mama, she tells me, don't worry about your size. She said, boys, I got a little more booty to hold than I. You know I won't be no stick figure, silicone Barbie doll. So if that's what you're into, then go ahead and move along. Because you know I'm all about that bass, about that bass, no treble. I'm all about that bass, no treble. I'm all about that bass, no treble. I'm all about that bass, about that bass. I'm bringing booty back. Go ahead and tell those skinny ladies that. Nah, I'm just playing. I know you think you're fat, but I'm here to tell you every inch of you is perfect from the bottom to the top. Hey, my mama, she told me don't worry about the size. She said, boys, like a little more booty to hold at night. And I won't be no stick figure, silicone Barbie doll. So if that's what you're into, because you know I'm...
questions to end the show, and not that much time, so we're going to have a little bit. What is the biggest success you've had in the last couple of years?
Biggest success is selling my apartment and moving to a big house. That was a huge success. Trying to navigate the world of mortgages. Why does no one tell anyone about mortgages when you were at school? What's a fixed rate? What's a floating rate? it still boggles my mind. But honestly, navigating that as a 40-year-old, it's a great achievement.
What's your superpower?
My superpower is boundless enthusiasm without a filter, which is a superpower and a super annoyance for some people. But I'm like, hey, look, let's stay positive. Let's stay enthusiastic.
Do you consider yourself to be an activist?
Maybe a needler, maybe a person who's like, but why? So maybe an activist at level one. I need to level up a little bit. I think that would be great. But I'm very much entry level, novice with a tiny sword and a tiny shield, having a go, waiting to level up my next bit of armor. But at the moment, just more of a, but why?
This isn't one of my normal questions, but I want to ask it anyway. What can we learn from the world of circus and performance for the world of sustainability?
There's a great link there with finding joy in people, realizing that it's a gift for people to come and spend time with you when you're entertaining them, right? They're taking time out of their day, or they've saved up for a cruise, they've saved up for years and years to come and spend 7 days with you. This is your little pocket of time to meet their expectations, to really blow them away, and kind of using that as a way to then share messages about sustainability is a great way of doing it. Getting people there who are there for something to have a great time and using that as a platform is brilliant. So,
because the challenge of sustainability is that it's often characterized as being quite dour and you've got to do less and not have fun.
Right, that's right, yes. Don't buy a house by the sea. It'll be underwater in 20 years, you know. Stay away from earthquake fault lines because your house will end up in a pit. I mean, it is very dour, right? But that's the idea from taking the entertainment angle. Look at opportunities to really change the narrative so it's more positive, right? Hey, look, solar panels are getting cheaper. Why don't you get in now? This is awesome. Shabam, you'll be able to, you know, warm up your water. It doesn't cost you anything. I mean, these are like big positive sells, right? This is really cool. So there's a lot of opportunity there. I mean, not to talk about the weather getting better because the planet's on fire. I mean, that might be too positive, but there's a lot of good news stories in there that can be used to get people enthusiastic about sustainability without them feeling guilty or feeling like it's too big and I can't deal with it.
So what motivates you? What gets you out of bed in the morning?
Coffee is a good start. It's a good kick. But getting out there and just, I don't know, having a blast, really. What motivates me is to get out there, have a great time, hang out with some great people, some great friends, and just look at making life easier for somebody else. I think, especially in my job as a business service manager at Pharmac, I have a team of 7 people who are very much just entering the world of government, entering the world of administration. My job is to say, hey, be your authentic self, get out there and have a great time. What can we do to make your life easy? And let's just get on with it.
What's the biggest challenge or opportunity that you're looking forward to?
Biggest challenge, biggest opportunity, biggest challenge. Is recognizing my frustrations, recognizing when things aren't going quite as I like them to. And my biggest challenge is to figure out a way of not swallowing that, but communicating that so I'm not having a little grown-up tantrum. I do grown-up tantrums quite well, as my manager would say. So it's becoming a bit more politically savvy when it comes to communicating with people to try to get my point across. So that's probably my biggest challenge.
We've been reading a methodology called the RANT methodology. And there's another similar one called the, I can't say it on the radio, the effort methodology.
We haven't heard that one in our Masters of Sustainable Business classes yet. That's not like a framework I can get behind.
Put that in tonight.
Yeah, please do. That's great.
And lastly, do you have any advice for our listeners?
I do. Continue listening to this podcast because it's very educational, and of course you're going to learn more, so that's great. And I guess my advice is to get out there and learn more. I mean, even if it's a little something, if it's a 3-minute video on YouTube that has some kind of sustainable something about it, just click it and have a watch. What's 3 minutes? The great thing is the algorithms will start giving you some other content like that. So look for positive things. Really be specific on what you select and what you watch, because then the big hive computer mind, Skynet, whoever, will start to feed you more positive things like that. So change what you click on will change what you watch and put you in a much more positive place to help the future.
Awesome. Nowhere.
Corey, I just think you're amazing. and you know that tonight is the last night that I'll have you guys in class, and that makes me incredibly sad. I'm so thankful for the opportunity to have got to know you over these last couple of papers, and especially for your willingness to contribute in the class and the way that you just get everybody excited about stuff. I really love that. And if I could give you a really good job as a teach with me guy, I would love that, but I cannot. But think about that for the future. Thank you.
Absolutely.
For bringing your authentic self every time, and we wish you all the best for the future. Thanks for joining us.
You guys are fabulous. Thank you so much for having me on.
We're going out to something that's perhaps got the opposite to what we need it to say. We're going out to Noel Coward's song, Don't Put Your Daughter on the Stage, which we actually, I think we want the other version, but I can't see a fun one that says, do put your daughter on the stage. We're going to have Reeves's version.
Regarding yours, dear Mrs. Worthington, of Wednesday the 23rd, although your baby may be keen on a stage career, how can I make it clear that this is not a good idea? For her to hope, dear Mrs. Worthington, is on the face of it absurd. Her personality is not in reality inviting enough, exciting enough for this particular sphere. Don't put your daughter on the stage, Mrs. Worthington. Don't put your daughter on the stage. The profession is overcrowded and the struggle is pretty tough. And admitting the fact she's burning to act, it isn't quite enough. She has nice hands to give the wretched girl her due, but don't you think her bust is too developed for her age? I repeat, Mrs. Worthington, sweet Mrs. Worthington, don't put your daughter on the stage. Bit of an ugly duckling, you must honestly confess, and the width of a seat would surely defeat her chances of success. It's a loud voice, and though it's not exactly flat, she'll need a little more than that to earn a living wage. On my knees, Mrs. Worthington, please, Mrs. Worthington, don't put your daughter on the stage. Said at the School of Acting she was as lovely as Peer Gynt. I'm afraid on the whole an ingenue role would emphasize her squint. She's a big girl, and though her teeth are fairly good, she's not the type I ever would be eager to engage. No more buts, Mrs. Worthington. Nuts, nuts, Mrs. Worthington. Don't put your daughter on the stage.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.